Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back to Full Time with Meg Linehan. I'm Meg. You are listening to a show all about women's soccer on the Athletic Podcast Network. Steph is back. We're ready to talk about all things U.S. Women's National Team after a pair of friendlies against Uzbekistan. It's been a beautiful couple of days in New York City here. I can actually walk on both my legs without crutches. Like, we're just, spring is here. Soccer is happening. What a time to be alive. Before we get to the rest of today's episode, as always, to show your support of Full Time, plus get all of our women's soccer coverage and everything else The Athletic has to offer on our site and app, basketball, all of our WNBA draft coverage, you name it, you can subscribe right now at theathletic.com/fulltime. Fun fact, this weekend was my 3-year anniversary at The Athletic, and while it's not a podcast anniversary to go along with it, I did want to say a quick word of thanks for everyone who has subscribed and followed all of the work, both on the site, here at Full Time, on Twitter, wherever you are. Thank you. All right, let's start with a little bit of news, but we're going to dig into the main thing of the week, so we'll keep it quick. But I wanted to start with a couple of TV numbers, one each for the NWSL and the U.S. Women's National Team. Now, the first friendly against Uzbekistan earned an average of 438,000 viewers on Fox last weekend. And then we also had 456,000 viewers for the big San Diego Wave-Angel City matchup on big CBS. Now, of course, both of those games are on the biggest channels, but both are pretty promising numbers, especially for the NWSL. And not to mention that San Diego Wave-Angel City game was pretty fun and wild and full of goals that was great for neutral viewers as long as you didn't mind an all-vibes, no-defense approach. All right, the field for this summer's CONCACAF W Championship is set with Mexico, Costa Rica, Trinidad and Tobago, Haiti, Jamaica, and Panama rounding out the eight teams alongside the U.S. and Canada to determine who's heading to the 2023 World Cup. There are four direct qualifying berths for the World Cup and one for the 2024 Olympics at stake this summer in Mexico. And France, Sweden, and Spain all clinch qualifying for 2023 over in Europe, the first teams to earn their berths via UEFA. All right, Steph is here, and it is time for some U.S. Women's National Team talk. All right, Steph, we survived watching two games of the U.S. Women's National Team versus Uzbekistan. Combined scoreline of 18-1. Yet I do actually think that we learned some things about this team simply because of who we actually saw on the field. What was your main takeaway from the two games overall? Let's just start there.
I think there weren't a lot of surprises about who Vlatko Andonovski favors, particularly when it comes to offense. I think I'm more interested in what he was doing with his subs and his defense, especially in the second game. Naomi Girma got a full 90. Now, part of that is he did tell press before these games that because of, you know, club duties, that they're trying to be really careful about minutes restrictions. So even if you're perfectly healthy, they're not going to load people with two 90-minute games in less than a week, which was smart. So I wouldn't read too much into roster decisions, but I do like that Girma got a full 90. I thought it was so interesting watching her, especially when Christy Mewis was on and they were trying to play out at the back. And every single time, Christy would be like, Naomi, faster, faster, switch fields faster. And I was just so interested in seeing that communication coming from kind of the older player and then the younger player who's having to adjust to, like, NWSL is one speed, right? You're already stepping up from college. And then again, the international level, regardless of who you're playing and the demands, they were like, Naomi, you gotta...
Yeah.
I thought that was so interesting. And then, yeah, the subs, especially in the second game. So Uzbekistan compacted back a little bit in the second half. And then he brings on the subs, which is Trinity Rodman, that's Midge Purse, that's Ashley Hatch. And so, yes, they didn't score as many goals in the first half, but Uzbekistan was also giving them far less than what they were giving them in the second half. So I thought, actually, that was an interesting place to learn when it's like, okay, they're starting to put, instead of three in front of goal, like five or six in front of goal, and what are you going to do with that? And they scored three goals.
Not bad. I mean, I think, you know, going into these games, I think everybody kind of had this expectation of these are going to be kind of pointless friendlies, right? Like, just for the context for folks who don't remember, they had apparently a top Asian team lined up, but there are quarantine issues still with the pandemic. And so that team was like, actually, no, JK, we have other things that we need to send our players off to do. And we don't want to deal with the quarantine of coming in and out of the United States, which seems fair at this point in time. And so really, the way that we've kind of heard it is it was Uzbekistan or nothing, which is not really an option for this team. And like, you can say, oh, well, what do you just have a camp, right? But I think putting it in the context of there were four games remaining until CONCACAF tournament this summer, which is now World Cup and Olympic qualifying, right? And that's going to have, I think, a slightly different vibe than what we're used to for CONCACAF qualifying tournaments. The competition, I think, is going to be better. And getting that front five, right? I think we heard a lot from Vlatko over the past week about the front five and how they're starting to gel. But seeing Mallory Pugh, Katerina Macario, and Sophia Smith together on a front line in two games and making sure that they were being ruthless as possible is not a bad thing for this team. And that is pretty much what we got.
I think they're pretty clearly in contention for like his first choice 11. And people are like, oh, but Alex Morgan's not back. Kristen Press is not back. And yeah, that would maybe throw a wrench in the works. But man, they are making it hard.
Yeah, I do think, you know, there is always going to be angst, right, about turnover on this team. But I think what we have seen is that the Olympic strategy didn't really work, right? And there is now the shift of, you know, we kept seeing that the youth movement was getting put off and getting delayed, right? And that the youth were really forcing their argument on Vlatko of, we are ready to play right now, right? And if you want to talk about a player who I think had a case at the Olympics for being a potential difference maker and then only got 7 minutes, Katerina Macario is right up there in terms of, you know, you have to get her minutes on a field in order to get her to gel. And we've seen really good, impressive stuff from her in Champions League too, right? Like, I think it was very interesting to see her pull basically the same spin move in the box, both in the Champions League game and then against Uzbekistan, and have more defenders on her with Uzbekistan. But like, you have to get her meaningful minutes, and so much in every single press conference was about the chemistry of this front line, the chemistry of the front five, the relationships that players are building. And you cannot do that without actually getting them game minutes. So
just to be clear, you're saying that if we had had these, even Uzbekistan kind of level friendlies before the Olympics, maybe Kat Macario is more ready to go then.
I don't know if it's Uzbekistan level. It's just, you know, now the work is actually happening, right? And you do actually have this kind of essentially, I don't want to call it like a playground environment, but you are going to have a quality of opponent that allows you to just try things, I think. And we saw that with Rose Lavelle too. Like, Rose Lavelle was just, no one was closing her down, right? So Rose Lavelle's like, all right, cool, I'm just going to try things. I'm just going to explore the space that you're giving me. I'm going to just create a goal out of nothing by running at your back line because no one's going to come and close me down, right? And so I think that it turns into a confidence boost, but I do think that it also gives you a chance to have to problem solve, right? Like, the first 25 minutes of that first game did not look very clean in a lot of ways. There was some really weird decision making happening, and then all of a sudden you get the unlock of, oh, okay, we have like a whole bunch of goals right in a row, and that does change the dimension of the game. But still, it took them 25 minutes to figure out how are we working to get the first one. And that's still, it's not going to be a Germany, right? But you still have to go through those game scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the stuff that they're doing, they would not have time and space to do under, you know, a more experienced team with more experienced players. I do wonder if the original top Asian Confederation team they had lined up was Japan, just because the coach of Uzbekistan is Midori Honda, who's a former national team player. And so maybe that's the connection there. Like, I think a lot of us were like, how did they get to Uzbekistan? Right. And I'm wondering if the Japanese Federation was like, well, we can't, but we know someone who might be able to.
Yeah. I mean, I thought a lot of what you were talking about on Twitter during these two games about Uzbekistan was really important too, is that it was very clear that they had a strategy coming into these games and like a real, we're not just going to cave under pressure. And I think it took them three halves to finally adjust their approach. But what was really interesting is that I think we did see a real dedication to, no, we're still going to try to get something out of these games for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And full credit to them for getting that goal. I mean, like, Vlaco walked into the media room after the first game and he was not happy about allowing a goal.
Right.
And that's a good thing for both teams, honestly.
They learned from that because it was a kind of chaotic set piece. First of all, Uzbekistan doesn't get a set piece without the way they play. If they just turtle up and try to fight out, they get cornered back. And so because they were willing to let themselves get a little stretched and try to be brave and pushing forward together instead of just like booting it up and hoping maybe they can win on the break, they get a set piece chance. And guess what?
Also, we got the best celebration.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was so good. It was so good. I just kind of like wiped everything else from the game out of my brain for a moment. Ugh.
I do, you know, I get the angst because, I mean, you know, go back to the Thailand game, right, in 2019. Like, none of these feel good, but also, like, frequently CONCACAF qualifiers don't feel good either. You know, like, I think that this is a team that is used to running up scorelines on teams that are ranked 45th in the world, right? And so there is a real internal look of what are we achieving, not just the scoreline aside, like, are we achieving whatever specific metrics that Vlaco Andonovski is looking for? And I think that's always something that you can trust about this team. But I do, you know, if this was kind of the test of that front five in chemistry, it's hard to be like, I mean, there was a tweet that I saw that was like, oh, the U.S. Women's National Team's B team came out here and took care of business. So I was like, this is not the B team. This is not the B team, right?
The future,
like,
is now. The
we're in it. We're in it. It's happened.
Vlaco was just like, okay, keep your place, old heads. It's time for, you know, look at these kids. They're ready. They're not even kids anymore. And I thought it was such a great payoff in terms of finally getting not just youth players in, but their careful assessment of NWSL. A lot of these players do not get the same consideration without NWSL. Like Aubrey Bledsoe, no, Kingsbury. You know, Ashley Sanchez.
Yes.
Ashley Hatch, even. Trinity Rodman, to a certain extent. I know Rodman is on the youth radar, but without that season with the Washington Spirit, maybe she's still getting called into camps and evaluated, you know, and as opposed to actually getting minutes on the field and scoring her first international goal. So, right. You know, in that sense, like, y'all watch your backs.
Yeah. I mean, no roster spot feels super safe right at the moment, right? I do think that Roosevelt feels pretty solidly a lock on this team. Lindsey Horan feels pretty solidly
when she's
a
healthy,
lock.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, you know, there's always the factor of health. So, like, with the asterisk that every single one of these names has, we've got to consider health a factor.
Kelly O'Hara, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think we're now kind of even seeing that shift of leadership of now we're looking at who is the next leader of this team. And Roosevelt getting the captain's armband for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. Lindsey Horan has been filling that role. Kelly O'Hara has been filling that role. So I think we are even seeing that shift now of Becky Sauerbrunn obviously missing from injury. I don't know if, like, I feel pretty confident that once she is back, she's going to get called back in because, again, I think she is kind of that voice. But I think her minutes are probably also going to be decreased just because also you do have to shift Alana Cook and now Naomi Girma, right, into getting more minutes, especially with Tierna Davidson out. So I think Becky Sauerbrunn plays a more valuable role coming off of the bench to settle a game down if something goes wrong, right, that she does have that presence. And in the meantime, this gives you the shift of, especially I think Alana Cook, getting her real minutes before the 2023 World Cup.
I think that's crucial because Alana Cook's not done cooking. She's not the finished product yet. She still needs a lot of experience. I think there are moments where she's not super, she's a little lackadaisical on the ball or in her decision making, where it's like, Alana, you need to,
again, that international, like, we gotta,
yeah. Well, even at the NWSL level sometimes I'm like, what are you doing? Like, can you gotta read the space and react a little bit faster than that. But you know, she'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
I do want to talk about Ashley Hatch and also the forward pool, because obviously, you know, for all of the focus, it was kind of an interesting thing at halftime for the second game where I was just like, we could be talking about these kids right now. Instead, we're talking about the players who aren't there, right? But the players that are really pushing for these depth spots, Ashley Hatch, I think, has made a real argument via NWSL, but also what she's been able to do off the bench for the national team. I mean, kind of an instant game changer, kind of target forward for this team that has been able to finish some real chances. Midge Purse has gotten a couple looks now off of the bench, right? Morgan Weaver is still kind of in that general picture. I think she's further outside, sure. But, you know, you have players coming in from the NWSL ecosystem that I think are really, this is going to be the one where competition for spots feels really, really tight. And Lynn Williams being hurt this year maybe opens up a door to someone like Ashley Hatch.
Oh, it would be so much worse if Lynn Williams were worse, quote unquote, if Lynn Williams and Sam Mewis were healthy. Like, things would just be dire, but in the best possible way. I guess, like, what a what a problem to have as a coach. I'm sure other coaches looking at that being like, screw you, buddy. I feel so bad for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so unfortunate what happened with Lynn Williams, that, you know, her friggin' hamstring just detached from her muscle because she's too powerful. It's,
time out, because I just still can't really go over the fact that when she went down during that game, right, to get subbed off, and she was like smiling. I don't know, as someone who just recently went through a traumatic leg injury, I'm just mentally going through the concept of like, oh, you're smiling right now. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's like me when I don't know what to do. So I'm just like, anyway, and so her, Lynn Williams being out, yeah, that is a huge opportunity for Midge Purse, because we saw last night she was asked to do a lot of the same things that Lynn Williams is asked to do She won a lot of her 1v1 take-ons. She dominated the right side, the width, and both able, like, coming into, you know, the box on the dribble and then setting up the cross and also being asked to, like, lurk around and mm-hmm. make herself really dangerous. And
yeah,
she did.
Press it was, when it's appropriate. Yeah. Yeah.
She was cleaning up a garbage goal, but it's still a goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Just in terms of midfield, I guess, where do you think this team is at? Just because I feel like we've had such a lock, right, for this midfield for so, so long, Julie Ertz being out. Now, I think Andy Sullivan is pretty clearly the heir apparent for the number six. But, you know, Jalen Howell, we saw a little bit, did not dress for the second game, which I think was a little interesting, right? But I think also, again, like, there really were just kind of rotation decisions happening. Lindsey Horan not dressing either for the second game, simply for what they called precautionary rest on the, which I feel like should be the story of my life. It's just, I'm taking precautionary rest right now. Thank you.
I can't come into work. Precautionary rest. I think Horan probably, the sense is that maybe there's some injury issues here that are like,
is travel, you know, too? Like, I know Vako Andonovski was pretty, you know, in that first conference call was just like, they're coming from France. We have to keep that in mind. You know, I guess Cap Macario has the advantage of being a youth who bounces back from flight better. Those days when you just be like, yeah, I'm cool.
Right. You get like 5 hours sleep and you get it the next day and you eat like a bag of candy and your little early 20s body is just like, this is fine. We can do it.
Yep.
Although, like, you know, okay, so this, the first game is in the Midwest, so that's kind of a longer flight from France. You know, West Coast to Pennsylvania is not the... It's kind of a similar time and distance, but I mean, I get it. For some reason, international travel just feels so much worse than domestic, even if it's the same amount of time and distance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So in terms of, so we got Sullivan, Rose, you know, had herself another pair of games, right? I think they said on the broadcast that Rose Lavelle has been the most consistently played under Vlatko Andonovski since he took over as head coach, which does feel right. I mean, she's also had a really good spell of health here, and I feel like I should be knocking on wood as I say this ahead of any sort of tournament function. But mm-hmm. I also, you know, Rose Lavelle, I think, has definitely looked... I feel like she's always looked fine on the international stage, but I do think Rose Lavelle with Laura Harvey and OL Rain is kind of a different player now.
Yeah. I think she's settling down. I think in the early years, all that stuff with injuries kind of gave the impression that she was injury prone, and I don't know that she is. I think it was just coincidence and bad luck, and she's been pretty healthy for a while now. I was also thinking, we were talking about NWSL, and I think a player gunning for that Rose Lavelle role is actually Savannah McCaskill. But the problem is she's probably not going to get to showcase that a lot because Angel City, like, once teams figure out that if you stop Savannah McCaskill, you can stop a lot of what's going on with Kristen Press as well. Like, they're going to have to work on that. But I do think, like, when we saw the games against Uzbekistan before that, Rose Lavelle is ostensibly playing kind of a 10-ish role, right? But she's being asked to come up and to sit in the gaps in the forward line so they can put, like, four, sometimes five people up into the box at one time in a line. And that's exactly how Savannah McCaskill also can be played, like asking her to play a more structural, like, playmaker midfield role and then asking her to be able to come up and see the gaps between the forwards, especially in a front three. And so, you know, she's looking at that and thinking, I could do that, maybe. You know, not quite the same skill set, but I do think they both overlap quite a fair bit. And so if Vlatko is looking there, again, why would he? Because he likes Rose so much and she's doing so well. And he's got a lot of midfield options and he's got Ashley Sanchez in there as well. But, you know, that is where my mind drifted.
I do think that it is, you know, I feel like this team has always kind of liked having, I don't want to say like direct clones, right? But kind of one for one options on some of these players. And so I do get your point on McCaskill potentially being a factor here. Again, you know, I think we've seen that Vlatko Andonovski is definitely looking at NWSL in terms of affecting call-ups and all that kind of stuff. So it's, I'm a little less concerned now in terms of if she's having good performances in the NWSL, like I do feel like that's on a radar. Another player that I did forget to mention, and I don't know why I messed up my forward line, but Mal Pugh. Obviously, again, yeah. If we want to talk about NWSL personally terrorizing the Houston Dash so far through the Challenge Cup, but then also coming in to national team environment and, you know, looking super confident, again, taking players one-on-one. And again, you know, like Uzbekistan, sure, but that was a thing that I talked to her about in the playoffs last season of how she wanted to get back to that part of her game. And this is a player where, A, you know, she's got the chemistry going with the forward line, but there is kind of that responsibility of, can you run at players? Can you run at a back line and make something happen? And Mal Pugh, I think, has really, really shown that she can be a factor for this team again.
Mal Pugh and Sophia Smith are such an incredible 1-2 punch, providing both the width and players who can come more central. And they're both versatile. They can play both sides. I think Mal Pugh is the more developed striker or forward at this time. I think Sophia Smith, sometimes she's like 80, 90% there. I would want to see her get sharper with Portland. Portland already like relies on her quite a bit, which yeah. I think is really telling given how young she is. But they're already like, Sophia, help us, you know?
Sophia, we're going to need like 10, 12, 15 right. goals out
and
of you this season. Thanks.
Somewhat delivering. But yeah, I think I want to see her get just that last 10%. And then it'll be like, oh, RIP, everybody else, you know? Yeah. And so I do love that's that option, which means like, you know, there's not really a weak side happening here, at least in terms of our forwards. So you can mix and match as you will. And Vlatko talked about this before the game, where he wants to look at both their ability to build through the middle and create combination play, but also to drag people wide and like just pump the crosses into the box. And then, like you said before, when we were starting to develop targets like Ashley Hatch as a big target, or even Kat Macario, Rose Lavelle, who can drift into that space, Ashley Sanchez, who can arrive late. And then you have players like that who can, you know, on either side kind of try to drag the defensive line a little wide, create some gaps. You know, should be a fun time. I would love to see them try to do it against a higher ranked team.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think that there's going to be a lot of pressure to have these June games, you know, be a little more competitive. And I'm very curious to see how that goes, simply because the U.S. is going to be in pretty much the exact same spot, though CONCACAF qualifiers are done. So maybe you get a higher quality team in from CONCACAF, you know, like maybe it is a USA-Mexico matchup. I think that kind of feels like the most obvious option for them right at the moment. But, mm-hmm. you know, you still have all the European teams prepping for Euros in this window. And so I think that really is going to prevent kind of a meaningful look. But if you're going into a CONCACAF qualifying tournament, why not get arguably one of the top CONCACAF opponents?
Mexico beat Puerto Rico 6-0 last night, by the way. When we're talking about like CONCACAF results, the United States is not the only team that can like stomp all over others. Right. Mexico beat Puerto Rico 6-0, and Costa Rica beat Guatemala 5-0. So, yeah. It's a whole nother podcast about the development of, you know, CONCACAF nations.
Yeah.
I think USA Mexico would be great. Personally, I wish that they would like just play each other in a like year long series and create a true regional CONCACAF rivalry there.
I mean, I think USA could also stand going to Mexico for one of these friendlies if they did a home and away.
Azteca.
Yeah. I mean, we can start the petition right now, but I do think, like, if you're going to go play in Mexico this summer, why not do a home and away series with Mexico to prep in June? Like, I understand that there's a financial cost to it, but I don't know if it would be a bad thing.
I mean, between NWSL and Liga MX crossovers, like, I feel like we can also work on United States-Mexico games. And Mexico is, they've been developing. I also think Diana Ordóñez declared mm-hmm. for Mexico as well. That's a nice get.
She from the North Carolina Courage?
Yeah.
Yeah, she came on in both games and, like, immediately scored for Mexico. Yeah. So, like, I mean, yeah, we're... I do think that starting to build that as, like, a meaningful, obviously you already have USA Canada, right? Which only, I think, now has shifted into something a little more meaningful. Sorry, Steph. But I mean, the Olympics definitely helped have those games. Like, they were always, like, tightly contested and could be spicy, but it wasn't necessarily ever anything that really felt like a real rivalry. But I do think USA-Mexico, especially with the rise of the domestic league there, that feels like a good investment even from the U.S. women's national team point of view to have that become kind of an annual game that would be like a real event to build around. It's on the men's side, obviously, with a very different connotation, but... I don't know. Also, I think it gives you a chance. If you put USA Mexico in a spot for the women where you are going to allow a crowd, like, I don't think we need to do the stupid thing where we, like, try to gatekeep Mexican fans out. It would also give you a better testing environment for some of these younger players where the crowd is not going to be as friendly within the U.S.
Right, where you don't have 10,000 girls screaming USA and doing the wave, at least not for them. I'm sure, honestly, Canada is looking at Liga MX Femenil and being like, yeah, that worked.
Yeah.
And being like, well, time for us. I mean, they're certainly agitating for it. Obviously, again, things are different. I think Mexico has like 3 or 4 times the population of Canada. Like, Canada, once again, suffering from being geographically bigger, but having like 1/10 the inhabitable land just because of, you know, the friggin' cold.
Yeah.
So, you know, good luck with him, because I would love for Canada to have a stronger pipeline and to be more competitive and not have to rely on like a once-in-a-lifetime golden generation and then get their dinky little 2-game gold medal celebration tour, which is, again, a whole other podcast. But
I'll just hand the podcast over to you and Shireen Ahmed, and you can complain about Canada's approach to the women's national team for an hour.
We'll call it full time, but in like Quebecois French.
All right. So we've got the 2 friendlies coming up in June, tail end of the month. I want to say the window is June 20th to the 28th, since I just looked at it earlier this morning. And then we've got CONCACAF qualifying running through the month of July. What is your main remaining question for the U.S. women's national team before we get into qualifying? I feel like I just broke your brain.
I don't know. I think all the questions that I have are only going to be answered by seeing them play, like, yeah, like a Mexico or even a Canada, who, yes, some the outcomes for a while statistically have been in favor of the United States, but they're still defensively can be very hard to break down. They defended their way to a gold medal in combination with, you know, a bit of luck. But yeah, they defended their way to a gold medal. So if you want to test ways to break down a tough defensive team that also is not just defending by sitting in a low block, I think that's a good test. Canada also has one of the best D-mids in the game in Quinn. So that would be a really good midfield test, actually. So I don't know if I can give you the questions, because the questions need other questions in order to become questions. Does that make sense?
It does.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
I think my number one question is, who's the starting goalkeeper for this team right now?
I just don't think it's that big a question. I really don't. I think there's a huge...
Maybe it's just my, like, personal thing of I would like that to be the question, because I think that it should be a question.
I think there's a huge goalkeeping pool right behind her. It's the biggest the pool has ever been. Like, with our AD Franch, by the way, like, when is she going to come back and start making some inroads here? This is also personal bias. Would love to see Abby Smith kind of get the same run out that Bella Bixby has gotten. Like, obviously Bixby did not dress for either game, but clearly she's being called into camp so that they can be like, you know, show
Let's take a look.
Yeah. Let's see what you're doing with Nadine out there in Portland. So I'd love to see that from Abby Smith as well, who I think has a great, you know, set, like, base set of skills and is also working with Nadine Unger. Obviously there's Kingsbury, Casey Murphy,
right, which I think was, because that was my big question of, like, where is Casey Murphy on this roster? And then she had been on the injury report for the Courage, so I think it might have just been a factor in terms of timing of when the roster was announced. But I think Casey Murphy, based on some of the performances that we've seen from her at the national team level, has a pretty good shot at least assuming the number two.
Right. Even if Casey Murphy hadn't been on an injury report and she wasn't called in, you're also kind of hamstrung. Sorry, that's a rough word. Sorry. By only having three spots, maybe four, for like a developmental spot for the camp. So, you know, defenders, you can call them five or six. Same with the mids and forwards. But the poor goalkeepers.
Yeah, it's three. I mean, what is interesting is maybe this is finally at a point where, you know, USA Hockey does a thing where they have a whole goaltenders camp, right? Where they bring in like a pool of 10 and get to work with them just on goal. Like, there's maybe potential here for U.S. soccer to start thinking about, like, we actually have a pretty decent pool. Where are folks at? Like, bring in the youth, you know, the U-20, U-17 at the same time, get them all in a room together, say, this is what we're looking for from the position. You know, here, let's work on, you know, playing out of the back and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think the first time where the U.S. women's national team would actually have enough players to even do it.
I'm so interested in what U.S. soccer's goalkeeping coach philosophy is versus, for example, like an Unger. Unger has said many times she does not coach like a lot of other coaches, particularly American goalkeeping coaches. And then when you talk to people like Bella Bixby and Abby Smith, they're like, yeah, it's very different with Nadine. The techniques and strategies and things that we talk about are very different from what we've been used to. So on the flip side, yeah, I do wonder if, for like Bixby being the primary example, just because she was called in, like, how do you merge styles or as an athlete, how do you adapt if, you know, one is asking you for one thing and your club's asking you for another, especially given for Bixby being kind of farther down the ladder, I would assume club is
probably her higher priority right now.
Which is not a bad thing.
No.
Right?
No.
I do, like, I want to maybe end on this one final note, because I think that there is maybe the bigger philosophical question around the U.S. Women's National Team of, you know, for so long, this has been kind of this core to a team, right? And I think the new CBA is also maybe going to impact this a little bit. But does it make more sense to maybe think about the same approach that the men's national team uses, where you are calling in players in form? I don't think we have enough international players to do it quite the same way of, like, oh, we're calling in like MLS players versus international players. But in terms of, you know, if the NWSL really is playing this role that I think we are already seeing it play, can you maybe use these camps now in a slightly different fashion of, we're going to start playing with some of these combinations a little bit more? And the only thing that gives me pause there is, I think in the Olympics, we saw, I don't know if it was tension or if it was just like, this is the first time that this approach has really been used, but like the way that a starting 11 might change to suit an opponent, which I don't think is a bad thing in concept, but in execution, it did not work.
Hopefully one day we'll get the full story of what went on there. I mean, not to rehash old ground, but yes, something was going on there beyond the tactical.
I still think about, what did we really learn from the Olympics, right? And like, because that was the defining question after the Olympics was like, what is this team going to take away from this? Because we're probably never really going to find out what the team is actually taking away from it in terms of not just watching video, right? But like, why some of this stuff didn't work? Was it overthinking on Vlatko Andonovski's part? Was it the fact that players weren't used to this kind of approach of, like, they just expected to play, and so that uncertainty felt kind of unmooring, right? Can you actually shift this team, though, into that kind of concept of, we're going to use certain players against certain teams, or we're going to use certain, you know, strategies against other teams, and, like, you might be in one but not in the other? And that's, like, a real mindset change for the national team on the women's side.
It happens every time, though. I don't think it's new. Like, think back to around 2004-ish when there was the big turnover from the 99ers. And this current core group, the Kelly O'Harris and Megan Rapinos, we had Abby Wambach at that time. Those were the young guns. That was another kind of cultural turnover. And so the team has gone through it before. They'll go through it again. They'll keep on trucking. They'll keep winning games. They might look different, but, you know, how soon we forget our history, you know?
But I think it's like, it's bigger than just like a roster turnover, right? Or like the youth coming in, because I think that is very much a part of this team. And 2004 was really one of the bigger moments. I think after 2015 too, was kind of a smaller version of that. And I definitely think, you know, there was that tension for a really long time of, you have this whole generation trying to make the World Cup Olympics combo, and a whole generation being like, we're not waiting for you to get your, like, please exit stage left. Thank you. But there is kind of maybe the bigger question of, does the approach change in terms of how you approach every roster, right? Like, that there might be less of a core.
Yeah, so to your point, that World Cup Olympic cycle, to a certain extent, does kind of artificially create, you know, the people staying too long or people having to come in too early in terms of timing. But I think the overall goal would probably be, yes, let's create a pipeline and a method of evaluating players so that we don't have to have this kind of generational turnover. Like, it's just gradual all the time. And so going into a tournament, we're not having to have this existential, oh, Alex Morgan, Kristen Press, Tobin Heath, Megan Rapinoe, like, what's going to happen? You know, and to a certain extent, I think they are kind of addressing that, where I'm not super worried, even if they don't play. I'll be kind of bummed because some of them are my favorite players, but I'll be like, you know, in the meta, like the overall sense of things, we're probably going to be fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it, that we're going to be fine.
We're going to be fine.
Sometimes, that's what we think.
Sometimes even if things aren't fine, the first step to being fine is telling yourself that you can be fine.
All right, Steph, I'm sure we will talk again soon on this podcast.
Oh, come on. We just floated like 3 or 4 other separate podcast ideas, including me for like 40 minutes going on a rant about how much Canada soccer like has dropped the bag. Next time.
I'm sure Canada soccer will love it. Thank you to Steph, as always. We're also going to have an article kind of digging into some of the stuff that we talked about, hopefully with a little bit more statistics, if we can actually pull some stuff together from the places that we do actually manage to get statistics from. But, you know, the usual. For all things full-time, you can visit fulltimepod.com. There are links for all of the major podcast platforms in one spot, plus more information about the show. If you'd like to subscribe to The Athletic and support all of our women's soccer coverage, you can do that right now at theathletic.com/fulltime. It's always one of our very best deals at that URL. My name is Meg. You have been listening to Full Time with Meg Linehan. You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at It's Meg Linehan and my work at The Athletic. Full Time does not exist without the work and support of senior podcast producer Michael Zimmerman. From The Athletic, I'm Meg, and thank you for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.